just going to stay this side of the table. Yeah, and we could all bunch together for comfort. My name is Leslie Burkhardt, and I am one of the low vision rehabilitation specialists at Braille Institute in Los Angeles. I have been with Braille Institute for over 30 years. How did that happen? And I've been the low vision rehab specialist for about 15 years. I have a 2-year occupational degree in optics that I got way back when, ophthalmic optics from Los Angeles City College. I graduated in 1980. And just recently, being the ever ongoing student, I got a master's degree in low vision rehabilitation in 2009 from Salus University, what used to be Pennsylvania College of Optometry. And it's been kind of interesting because this field, when I started in it, was kind of like, you look like a nice person. How'd you like to be a low vision rehab specialist? And now, of course, the field has changed, and there's so much new technology to keep up with that it's probably a good thing that they're training people and getting them certified and that sort of thing. We have another couple of people who have come in. We have another person. We have two other people who have come in, so that's great. So I'm just going to launch in, and at a certain point when everybody seems to have settled in, yeah.
Is the chair.
Oh, and does Bernice want to give me an introduction? Okay, because I just tend to jump into these things. And I always like getting introduced. I have a microphone. I can just hand it on over to you, Bernice, and we can share.
We can do that. I'll hand it right back. Okay. No, don't move, Donna. Okay, this is Bernice Kandarian, and I'm president of the California Council of Citizens with Low Vision. I want to welcome you to our program this afternoon. Our speaker is Leslie Burkhardt. She's from the Institute, and she's a low vision specialist. I've asked her to talk with us today about new items for people with low vision. So without further ado, Leslie.
Thank you very much, Bernice. And I don't know if any of you were at the ACB convention in July in Reno. You and Donna were, okay. I did a presentation there, which is in a way sort of going to be a continuation. This workshop will be a continuation of that. That workshop was on the basics, and Bernice said, Leslie, they want to know about the new stuff. They want to know about the new technology. And so, you know, I want to give kind of a brief encapsulation of what I was talking about in Reno, and then I kind of want to jump into this thing called new technology. Essentially, my presentation in Reno was a topic that is very near and dear to my heart, and it is now even more important than before. My presentation in Reno was entitled The Wise Consumer, Improving Your Ability to Select Assistive Technology. And my feeling is, you know, we're kind of moving from back 10 years ago, people tended to go to their low vision specialist and they kind of put them through this exam. And this is still happening today. They sort of put them through this exam, bim, bam, boom. They go out the door and I'll sometimes hear their reaction afterwards. Well, they're getting me something. You know, Department of Rehabilitation is working with my low vision specialist, and they're going to get me this technology. Well, what is it? Well, you know, they showed it to me real briefly, but I can't quite remember what it is. Well, what are you going to use it for? Well, you know, I think I'm going to use it for this. But the gist of my presentation in Reno is that you as consumers have to really learn to essentially take charge of the assistive technology exploration, selection, and instruction process to make sure that you get technology that is truly helpful for the particular person you are. And that entails your vision, and it entails about 500 other things that relate to who you are. That also fits in with the environment where you're going to be using the technology, which also fits in very importantly with the particular tasks that you need to accomplish. All those things put together and all the variables that can be organized into those three categories will define and help you explore the assistive technology that is available to you. And the framework of that workshop was really a framework that I learned from the CSUN program, the CSUN AT program, which a couple of years ago I took a one-week crash workshop in assistive technology that was put on by CSUN. And this particular part of it that I found very valuable was a lady by the name of Joy Zavala. She's doctorate in education, and essentially it's her job to sort of be the expert for kids who are needing assistive technology in the classroom. And this very simple framework that she developed, which gets very complex when you get into it, but if you just remember the simple part, it helps you as a consumer kind of organize your selection process. And it's called the SETT framework, S-E-T-T. Now, she calls it, you consider the student, who that student is, their vision level, and all sorts of other, you know, as I say, 500 other variables, the environment, the task, and that will help you determine the tools you will use. Now, I don't use student because a lot of times I'm dealing with adults who may or may not be in school, so I call the S in the SETT framework self, okay? So that was the workshop that I talked about, and we started out by asking some very basic questions in that workshop, and I might kind of ask them to you to just so you get warmed up in thinking about things as I'm talking about technology. And essentially the questions I asked, and if anybody wants to pipe up, you know, raise your hand, and you know, I don't know your name, so if you raise your hand, I'll say, I don't know what we'll do. We'll figure it out, and it'll work. Just kind of speak up. Describe your most effective tools that you now use to help you accomplish the tasks that you need to do. As a person with a vision impairment, what are the specific tools that right now are your go-to tools, the ones that when I want to get something done, this is what I'm going to use? Can anybody kind of talk about the top tool that you have that you use currently? Right there in the back with the Go Braille T-shirt. And I'm going to...
My name is Robert, so there you go.
Good. Thank you, Robert. It's on your elbow.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I think my 2-diopter spherical lenses, my glasses, I use them all the time for generally just for reading tasks. I read a lot of work. My job requires a lot of reading.
Okay. Twenty-two diopters, and I'm going to repeat this for the sake of the recording. Robert uses 22 diopter aspheric eyeglasses, essentially. And they do have some advantages if they're useful to you. Can anybody say, and I always say, in the technologies that we use, the selection process that we go through is always a comparative process. It's not, this is a good device. It's, this device, how does it compare to other technologies that are out there? And can anybody give one great advantage to a 22-diopter aspheric pair of eyeglasses compared to maybe an electronic device? Robert?
Hands-free.
Say again?
Hands-free.
Okay, hands-free. And that's something you want to put on your list when you're thinking, because your hands have got other things to do. Now, way in the back, and I've forgotten your name, and I shouldn't. I should know it. But you know who I'm talking about. You know, she just made, tell me your name.
Stephanie,
because I knew it. She'd know it. I see it all the time on emails you send me. Stephanie said, portable. Yeah. I mean, not just portable, but portable. I can put this in my pocket. Okay, portable. Or I can hang this around my neck, portable. And the other thing that can make a big difference, no, electricity. Did you notice that John and I were at the front of this class, at the front of this speaking area, running around like chickens with our heads cut off when we first started this conference, with this workshop? And what were we looking for? Electricity. And electricity is not always there. So if you've got a device that works for you that doesn't have electricity, woo, that's a biggie, let me tell you. And okay, you got electricity. A lot of these new devices have rechargeable batteries. And just like I demonstrated one of my Murphy's Law regarding electricity, that the extension cord is always 12 inches too short. I mean, it's not that the extension cord is 5 feet too short. It's always 12 inches too short. It's like you almost make it to the outlet and you don't. And the same Murphy's Law book also pertains to rechargeable batteries. And what is that Murphy's Law regarding rechargeable batteries?
Battery will die
right when you need it. In other words, you'll check it throughout the day. It's working. I need to use it. It's dead. So again, yes. Robert, good example of, you know, and I always say this in my outline, and if any of you want it, I've got a large print outline, and I also have it available electronically, so if you can leave me a business card with your email, you know, I can send you this electronically. But where is my wonderful, I have at the end of that workshop potential confounding factors that, you know, we're supposed to be going through this very logical evaluation process using the SET framework, making lists of advantages and disadvantages, and then the glitz effect sets in, okay? And the glitz effect is very simple, and we all fall for it. And we fall for it for very good reasons. Sometimes it's effective, but the glitz effect is it's new. It's expensive. It's very complex and high tech. Therefore, it must be effective. Okay? We say that. We think that. We're so thrilled when we see the iPhone. It's $300. It must be good. And it very well may be good. But again, if you buy, it's new, it's expensive, it's complex and high tech, and use that to make your decisions, wow, you'll make mistakes, and you'll make really expensive mistakes. So watch that glitz effect, and guard against it by using SET framework. Okay, so that's a good example of like kind of a primary thing that a particular person uses. Now, all of you may be listening to this and think, Robert got a 22 diopter pair of aspheric eyeglasses. They work for him. They should work for me, too. I'll go and ask her that, or I'll go buy it on the internet. I don't know. Nowadays, these things are not supposed to be available on the internet, but where there's a will, there's a way. You know, and that's another thing we have to be careful of. Robert is a different person from you, even if Robert's vision happened to be exactly like yours. That in and of itself doesn't mean that his aspheric eyeglasses are going to be helpful for you. The environment that he's using them in may be very different. The tasks that he's using them for may be very different. But Robert might be a person that after this workshop ends, you might want to walk over and say, "Hi, Robert, my name's so-and-so. Tell me about these eyeglasses." Because networking really is such an important part of the process. But again, you have to really explore it. And I'll give you a good example why. You know, I am a low vision rehabilitation specialist, and I just recently got my master's in 2009. And to tell you the truth, I made a lot of stink when I was in that program. And they go, "Well, what's Leslie so upset about?" You know, most of the people that are going through these master's program, they're beginning. They don't know anything. I've already worked in the field for 15 years. And basically, they're saying, okay, well, figure out what the person's visual acuity is and figure out their field of view and, you know, talk to them about what tasks they're doing. And then just give it to them. You've got the problem solved already. There's a little formula here. 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. Hand it over to them. You don't even have to test them out to see if they can use it. Just send out that representative. Send out that representative to deliver it to them, and they'll be on their way. And as a low-vision rehab specialist, what I used to scream about in my class was a little thing called reading stamina, which is starting to break the surface. And one of the reasons it's starting to break the surface is I've infiltrated. You know, I'm in all these listservs now, the AFB listserv run by Ike Presley and the Low Vision Rehab Study Group run by Don Fletcher, who is an ophthalmologist who specializes in low vision rehab. I have made it my business to infiltrate. And one of the things I talk about is reading stamina. I'll respond with, when they say, "This is wonderful, this is great, it's new technology, everybody will love it," I say, you know, remember we have to consider things like reading stamina. How long can a person read before they get eye fatigue? And this is the thing, it varies from person to person. You can have two people, they both have 2200 visual acuities, and you'd think, okay, and they have the same visual field, and you'd think, well, they must have about the same reading stamina, right? Not necessarily so. And one of the big things that kind of tips you off, although you still have to explore the individual, there are, and you'll get more variables. I don't get as much variables with my older adults who have adult onset vision impairment, but people who have early childhood congenital vision impairment, sometimes they're very different. There are things like Stargardt's. They're cone dystrophies, where you actually get a blank spot in the center of your retina. It's blank. There are no nerve cells there, okay? And the bigger the blank spot is, the worse your visual acuity is, okay? So somebody could have what we call a central scotoma, which is a central blank spot. And their central scotoma could bust big enough that they have a 20/200 visual acuity, okay? Now, put that person side by side with a person who has vision impairment from maybe albinism or congenital cataracts. You know, congenital cataracts, vision impairment from congenital cataracts really is kind of a misnomer. Typically, you don't have the vision impairment from the congenital cataracts because the congenital cataracts are removed, okay, fairly early in the game. But usually, not early enough. They're starting to remove cataracts, maybe possibly early enough. But especially, you know, even today, a lot of times, you have a cataract really early, and you miss something that happens, gosh, it's even in the first, I think, 2 to 4 months, we go through a critical developmental stage where the center of the retina has to develop nerve cell density. In other words, it gets more and more nerve cells, okay? And that's what determines our visual acuity. And for most of us, those nerve cells start keep multiplying and multiplying until we get a 20/20 visual acuity. Well, a lot of people with congenital cataracts or albinism, their center of their macula, the center of their retina, it's there. There are nerve cells, but they don't multiply and get denser. And those people may also have a 20/200 visual acuity, not unusual. Big difference, though, between the person with the central scotoma and 20/200 visual acuity and the person with essentially an undeveloped macular area is frequently reading stamina and reading speed, okay? The person with the central scotoma, they've got this blank spot right in the center. Yeah, Shirley's raising her hand. And right in the center of their reading system. And what does that disrupt? It disrupts particularly what I call sequential scanning tasks, okay? What is the biggest sequential scanning task that we do? Reading! We've got to go from one word to the next, and when we get to the end of the line, we got to go to the next line, okay? And you got a big blank spot in the center of your visual field, and it's not that you can't read. You can read. You just have to expend about 10 times more effort than the person who has the intact visual field, okay? And so reading stamina, okay? Big topic, and it's something that again, if you're applying SET framework, you're looking at yourself. And remember that you, as you know, I hate to say it here, but is anybody under 40 in this room? Okay, we got one person. We got one person. Yeah, Bernice, come on. We got one person in this room. God bless you. You know, I wish I was still there. But you know what? Even when you're 30, okay, if you have had this vision impairment throughout your life, and it's even if it's changed fairly slowly, okay, dramatic changes can throw you off balance. But basically, you know your vision. In some cases, you know it better than the optometrist or ophthalmologist who's evaluating you. And one of the things that you need to pay attention to is a little thing called reading stamina, okay? Because if somebody's going, you know what, you have this device, and this device is purely a visual device, and you have this device, and this device, it is a visual device, but it also has audio supplementation, Okay? If you're somebody who says for a fact, you know what? I can read 50 words. And then I need to take a break. And if I read 50 words and then take a break, and then 5 minutes later I read 50 more words and I take a break, and 10 minutes later I read 50 more words and then I take a break. If you're the kind of person who says, and then I go home with this massive headache. You know, I had this really well-motivated nun. You know, nuns are very well motivated. They're good people. And she had vision loss from, she'd been worked on a mission in Korea, learned Korean, gone over to Korea, and got toxoplasmosis. I always get it mixed up with histoplasmosis. Toxoplasmosis is the one you get from cat litter, I think. Anyway, she got that one. It's either histo or toxo. I always kind of forget, and usually I keep it straight, and I have not right now. Anyway, she got a vision impairment, central scotoma, and she's just this really well-motivated lady. She still works at Braille Institute, volunteers at Braille Institute, and I was talking to her about reading stamina, and she goes, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. She says, because I work so hard at reading, and then I get a stomachache, and then I vomit. I thought, wow, that's well motivated. But you know, you kind of need to be aware of these things. Again, if you're selecting technology and you have the chance maybe of getting an audio device, it may, you know, keep you from that headache or that vomiting, and it may also make you a more efficient person. So again, set theory. Okay, so that's essentially what I'm going to talk about as far as set goes. And then, you know, this is what Bernice wanted me to do. She said, Leslie, people know about these things. Don't go on and on about these things. And they want to know what's new. And I'll tell you this. I listen to the buzz on low vision device. I'm always monitoring the buzz. What's new? What's different? And you know what everybody's saying this year? Not a whole lot out there. Not a whole lot going on. And I'm going to tell you, just to kind of give you an idea of how I monitor the buzz, because this is a really important skill. And again, it has become more vital. Me, it's my job, 40 hours a week, to evaluate low vision rehabilitation technology. But it's only one part of my job. I need to spend some part of my job seeing clients and applying the knowledge that I've learned, okay? And this is the state of the art right now. This is what I have to tell you. In fact, I kind of wrote it down as a disclaimer. The new modern low vision rehab specialist's disclaimer is basically that the scope of assistive technology and the rapidity of new devices being introduced and updated is such that I, as a low vision rehab specialist, do not even try to keep up with it anymore. And I used to keep up with it. 5 years ago, a device had come in, I'd have the rep in, I'd sit down with me, make sure that I know every nook and cranny of this, leave me with a demonstrator so that I can show it to people and really explore it. And the scope of technology is so much changing so rapidly now that for the most critical devices, I can do that process. I have to target and prioritize extremely carefully. And the representatives, there are some devices, in fact, I've got one here today, the Clear Reader, the Optilec Clear Reader, that actually for a certain person with certain needs, this can be a good device. And when that person comes into Braille Institute to see this device, do I have one available? I don't. And it's not John's fault. It's not my fault. There's so much technology out now that if he kept me up to date and all of my colleagues up to date, the guy wouldn't make any money. He just spent time giving us these new devices, and they'd be out of date in a couple of years, and he'd pull them out, and he'd put in new ones, and some of them sell, and some of them don't. So, again, we prioritize very, very much. And my strategy now is when I get a client who comes in who has specific needs that I know I'm not addressing with the devices that I have in my office, I say, come back for a follow-up appointment. And sometimes we actually get the rep to come down with that device. Or sometimes that client is comfortable enough, once I give them shopping lessons, they're comfortable enough with calling up the rep. And usually I say, don't just call up one rep. Call up a couple of reps. Let them know you're talking to other reps. Be competitive. Competition helps the reps. They do better jobs. It brings them to their full potential when they know somebody else is going to come in the next day and show them similar technology. And then the way I work with the client is I say, report back to me. You know, make a list of questions. Tell me what questions you have. You can ask the reps. John's an impeccably honest guy, but John is always also a sales rep, and he's not going to absolutely trash his products and say, you know, if I were you, I'd get the Freedom Scientific such and such, because, you know, it's not really his job. And so it's a good thing to have people like me who are neutral. And sometimes we are and sometimes we aren't. So, again, who is the final person who has to be in charge of the procedure? You, the consumer, okay? Absolutely. So what I do now is I evaluate on a case-by-case. I listen to the buzz, and I want to kind of give you an idea of the buzz that I get, okay? Because I pay attention to this, and I have all my folders on my computer, and I'm filing things away, and I'm bookmarking websites and remembering things. And you'd just be surprised at the things that I get. First of all, you know, Junior Blind of America has workshops every so often, and you know, those are great to know about. Hadley School for the Blind has webinars, has free webinars that you can listen to. How many of you are computer literate now? You're on the internet, you're searching the internet, you have ways of accessing the internet. We've got about half of the people in here. We've got about half of the people doing that. And that's a, to tell you the truth, that's a very good percentage, okay? The internet, I say this even for people who do not have vision impairment. Have you heard this? People who use the internet go, oh, it's so simple, it's so easy, it's no problem. They don't know diddly squat. You know, they must be doing something wrong because generally speaking, I mean, my computer just drives me up, and I'm a low vision rehab specialist, and it's like every day, you know, there are days when it just gives me such beautiful information, and I go, this is miraculous, and there are days when I just want to throw it against the wall, and it's not easy, and it's one of my jobs is to make sure that a particular individual has all their ducks in a row before they address a particular tool. And there are some tools that I will tell people flat out, don't even investigate this tool until you learn to touch keyboard. Don't even go there. I know all of your friends have said this is great, but check with your friends. I'll bet they're touch keyboarders. There are certain foundation skills that you may need to access some of this technology. But I want to give you a great example of how the internet can be wonderful. I had a lady who called me, and I've gotten these calls for years. I heard something on the TV. It's something that people with macular degeneration can use, and it helps them to see just like everybody else. And, you know, a lot of times, if they couldn't give me a lot of information, I just hadn't a clue. I couldn't even help them. I'd go, you know, if you can't tell me something about something, or I haven't seen it myself. I'd love to help you, and I just can't. Well, this lady had one piece of information. Actually, she had a couple of pieces. She had those, that information. AMD, okay. CNN. CNN, she had a channel for me. CNN, AMD, special eyeglasses, scientist from Oxford. Okay, so I said, listen, I'm on the phone with her. Real time, I'm on the phone, and I say, I'm not sure what you're talking about. Let's put in a Google search. If you can give me a couple of moments, CNN, AMD, eyeglasses. she used the word bionic. Bionic eyeglasses. Okay. And boom, up pops a little video. I said, it's a 3-minute video. Let me put my speakerphone on and we'll listen to it together. And we listened to it. Okay. We listened to it. This guy is a neuroscientist from Oxford. We didn't actually get that from the little blurb on the news. But anyways, at one point the lady said, well, will it help people with AMD? And he said, yes, I think so. He said it kind of like a deer in the headlights. And I had a feeling that this young neuroscientist probably didn't know the visual capabilities of people with AMD. And so I said, well, you know, this sounds like one of the new implant chips that's going on. You know, a lot of people are experimenting with implantable chips. In fact, there is one that is actually FDA approved now, and it costs something like, I don't know, $100,000 or something incredible like that, okay? And basically, maybe if you're like super wealthy and you're totally blind and it gives you a little bit of light perception, it gives you a chance to see very, very gross forms. Maybe you want to explore it. And I always say these things in very cautious terms because you, okay, you don't have any fall, so you don't have anything to lose, right? No, you could go into one of these experiments and come out with a chronic pain issue, okay? You have to explore them very carefully. But this is what we did, you know? Okay, Oxford, he's given me a name, let's plug it in. And we got all this information, and she said to me, and you know, I go through the SET framework. Who are you? What do you need to do? What environment are you using it in? What would you use it for? I'm an artist. I want to paint. I need to see color. My color vision is not that good anymore since I have age-related macular degeneration. Okay, we go to the website. Guess what? Black and white image. Okay? That gave her information right away. Now, what did she also say? But Leslie, if there's ever clinical trials, I'd like to at least check into it and get it evaluated by my eye doctor. Now, again, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, matching people up with clinical trials was more difficult. Now, and basically what I'd say to them is go to your eye doctor, and I still say that, okay? You want to check in with your eye doctor, and you want to make sure you have an eye doctor you can trust and you know, and that's harder to find nowadays. What I told her is blindness.org. Has anybody used that website ever? It is Foundation Fighting Blindness. Foundation Fighting Blindness, blindness.org. And what they do is they fund research, and so they keep track and monitor research. And I was able to give that to her, and they divide this up. If you've got age-related macular degeneration, you can click on macular degeneration, you can click on research, and it's only going to give you clinical trials for macular degeneration. And because many of their visitors to that website are visually impaired, they actually put, if you're not a JAWS user, if you're a 75-year-old non-PC literate person who wants to actually access some of these research articles. Well, somebody who uses the computer can start the speech synthesizer that's built into their website. And you can listen to this big, long research article for yourself and hopefully make sense of it. They're actually pretty good at translating these research articles, too, which is another helpful thing. So this is the kind of thing that I can't do. So I do a lot of my research instantaneously. And one of the reasons I do that is if I do a lot of research and a person comes in 2 weeks later, a lot of times the research that I've done 2 weeks ago can be out of date. You know, I just did a quick search on Bard, NLS Bard, and people have been using Bard. How many of you use Bard, the Braille and reading download, Braille and audio reading download? Yeah, and there are about three of you in here years using Bard. Bard is great because you used to have the library service, the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. Braille Institute is the distributing library in the Southern California area. You call them up. You can still do this. You call them up, and you order a book, and they mail it to you. Well, now people are accessing the catalog on the internet and downloading their books and listening to them on their computer or transferring them to their super little portable devices and listening to them on the bus or wherever. But some people have a lot of trouble with the Bard program. And Steve Bauer, our assistive tech, yeah, there's a lady over there going, me. And you're not alone. Steve Bauer, our assistive technology instructor in Orange County, who is actually my go-to person because he's totally blind and he actually has to use these technologies, which means that he knows every nook and cranny and he can really give me a thorough evaluation. He said he teaches Bard access down in Orange County, and he said, you know, he's so methodical. I love him. He said, you know, Bard access requires 32 individuals. If you count, first I do this, and then 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 I do this. 32, okay? Now, if you can't learn that 32, and 32 sounds like a lot. Once you've learned it and you've done it over and over again, you know, you develop a routine, and if you do it often enough, you stick with it, and you can do it. Some people, okay? Some people can, some people can't. And I say, you know, you need to evaluate yourself. Some people can't because they just plain do not have the time to learn it. And it takes a little bit of time. Yeah. People go, no, I'm doing other things. If you can implant a chip into my brain that tells me how to do it, then I can do it. But otherwise, it's just not happening at this point in my life. Or there's no teacher. Well, yes, go and see Steve Bauer because he really is an excellent teacher. And this is the good thing too. There are webinars and things on the internet now, so we're starting to have access in our home. We don't have to travel to Anaheim for a class. And Brian Albritton does it in Los Angeles also, and he is very good also. But it's hard to get to Braille Institute on a particular day at a particular time, and sometimes those hours go very quickly, okay? And there's 40 people in the room, and you miss one thing at the beginning, and because of that, you don't understand the next 10 things, okay? So, I just noticed Bard now, for a while, you could only access instructional material from kind of state library systems. And now NLS has finally set up their Bard website. And that was a good sign because they usually kind of do their homework. And what I notice is it's a very accessible website. It's, you know, when I look at websites, I go, oh, this is so wonderfully plain and bare, and it doesn't have things jumping up and down and boxes moving around, and will you boxes that say, will you take a survey? No, it's a very plain thing, and it has links where you, if you want to go straight to instructions, you can go straight to instructions on how to download. And that's something that I didn't see the last time I looked. You know, so again, it helps to monitor things because things do change. Yeah? Is that Newsline, NFB? No. Telephone reader news.org. Okay, telephonereadernews.org. Try it out. Well, when you say you can go on the, and they have a phone number on that website?
No, they have a website and they have a touch and there.
They have a, I'm sorry.
They teach you how to use Bard.
Okay. So again, it's a nice thing about these workshops. We can all network and share information, and that makes a big difference because nobody can keep track of it all by any means. Let me tell you a couple of the things that I've come across in the past, just in the past week. Okay, just in the past, maybe week or two. I don't know. Somebody on one of those listservs from the Heinz VA hospital just recently sent me very methodical lesson plans for the iPad and the iPhone. Okay? So that's nice. And if you would like a copy of that, it's a text file, so you need to be a JAWS user to access it, or you know, if you do large print, you put it under your CCTV. It's 109 pages. Okay, and this is something that you must realize, because this is the other thing that I have a big problem and have not found a solution, okay? Somebody comes into my office and they say, I want to learn how to use the iPad. And the curriculum is 100, you know, actually the iPhone and the iPad put together are 109 pages. But even so, am I going to teach that person in this hour? No. So again, sometimes it is finding classes where you can really learn about these things, and then it's a question of, do you have the time? Yeah. That's the iPhone class at Apple. Yeah. Okay, great. The iPhone class at Apple, $69. Do they give guarantees? I've actually heard extremely good things from people who have gone to visit Apple that apparently, and to tell you the truth, it amazes me, because you take a person who is really not part of the visually impaired community, and I say, are they going to get the issues? Are they going to really communicate and be able to teach those? And I've actually, again, I monitor the buzz, and people have gone to the Apple store. I've had like my real, you know, my 80-year-old woman who has really not had a technological background at all. I've had people like that go to Apple and had very good experiences and learned good things. So, yeah, you're paying for a block of time, but this is what I say. Oh, if you will give me your email address, you can come up after the workshop, and I will be happy to give you my email address, and I can mail it to you. I can email it to you, okay? Or we can even do it, I don't know, you know, just come up and talk to me, and we'll figure it out, okay? But this is the thing. I'll give a disclaimer. I got this 109-page curriculum. Now, Ike Presley over at American Foundation for the Blind, this is the only comment I heard. We looked through it at AFB, and I think with a few modifications, he didn't say what the modifications were, this is going to be very applicable. That's all I've heard about it. And, you know, again, you get 109 pages. watches, that somebody has obviously worked on this for 2 years, who is from the VA system, so they're probably low vision rehab specialists, and they may honestly, they could possibly produce a completely useless document, okay? I've seen it happen before, and it could be extremely helpful. So again, you have to evaluate it, and you have to evaluate it from your personal perspective. You know what? It's almost 5 o'clock, for gosh sakes. You know, these workshops go very quickly. And I think we're going to end it because you guys want to go out and party, don't you? You got you. That, oh, good God almighty. Amazing. Okay, so you're going to go out to dinner. Okay. Well, you've been a wonderful audience, and I hope I gave you at least a little bit of information, a start. Yeah.
Say Dr. Fletcher's list the
Dr. Fletcher. You know what that is? That is kind of an interesting listserv. And I'll tell you something, it's actually not as helpful to me as, and if you have to go, don't worry, because we're going to continue on, but the workshop is officially over, so if you need to get somewhere, go. You know, the two listservs that I regularly monitor, Ike Presley's and Don Fletcher's. Now, Don Fletcher's is interesting because he's very picky, okay? Actually, you have to be a low vision rehabilitation specialist with experience. In other words, he doesn't even want newbies. He doesn't even want new low vision. He is an ophthalmologist with Smith Kettlewell. Yeah, Eye Research Institute. He's known all over, but he uses that as his thinking board. And he doesn't want to have people asking real newbie questions. And so he really narrows it down. And actually, one of the things, if you are a low vision rehab specialist, you can contact him by email and you can say, I would like to attend, because first he wants you to attend his once a year annual low vision rehab study group in San Francisco. And then if he approves of you, you can join the listserv also. But usually, actually, pardon me, the approval process happens before you even go to San Francisco. In other words, he checks you out, and if he feels like you can be a contributing member, then he will invite you to come and you can go. But it's been very valuable for me from an ophthalmological perspective. He produces a lot of interesting things. So I've gotten a lot out of that. But it's kind of an invitation only.
What about the Ike Presley?
The Ike Presley is, I think, less exclusive, and yet you really have to be a low vision rehabilitation specialist. It's not a consumer listserv. And it does have a lot of interesting information on it, I got to say. I kind of wish he'd open it up a little bit more. There is such a thing as knowledgeable consumers, and you might want to, okay? Ike Presley is really open to that, okay? And his web address is ipresley, ipresley, at afb.net, I'm pretty sure. I think the extension is net. Yeah. And you could certainly email him and say, you know, Ike, somebody told me about your listserv. This is who I am, and can I join it? Because he really does pass on a lot of interesting stuff. What did he pass on this week? He passed on that the Chinese have developed a robot that can play ping pong.
Of course.
But it's kind of incredible, and this is what you have to worry about. Okay, it's got two eyes because you know you need depth perception to see that ping pong ball coming at you, and I looked at the video and this thing's playing ping pong. Okay, and it can play ping pong with a human or it can play ping pong with another robot. But this is what I worried about because I worry about everything. I am not just a low vision rehab specialist. I am a worst case scenario specialist. okay? And that is really my natural inclination. And what I say is, okay, well, they developed this robot that can play ping pong. And what I worry about these technologies, like I have a hearing impairment, okay, and they're going to start, you know, they've already developed the cochlear implant and that sort of thing. But are they going to get to the point, are they going to get to the point where it's easier for them to, it's easier and more efficient and more economical and they get more bang for their buck to build a robot from scratch, rather than let us weak, fragile humans who have all of these things that can go wrong with us, rather than giving us the technology. This is, you know, it would make for a wonderful sci-fi story that here we are, and can't we please have this technology and know it's more efficient for us to just build this from scratch. We'll see. We don't know what the future will be, and that's exciting, and it's interesting also, and we have to keep monitoring it. So thank you all for your attention today.
Thank you. And I would like to also let you know, if you're not a member of CCCLB and would like to become a member, Donna Sanchez, our treasurer, is here. Just raise your hand and she'll come and sign you up.
May I say also that John Wolf has brought the Clear Reader and he's hooked it up to the Optilec Clear View so that you can see the Clear Reader low vision component. And if any of you are interested in that, and I don't know, you've been snacking through this thing and you're not starving and hungry, John would be happy to give you a demonstration up here up front. Also up front, I have the new LS&S 2012 catalog. I also have the Optilec Shop Low Vision Daily Living Solutions too. So if you want any of those catalogs, please help yourself. And if you'd like an outline from my previous thing, The Wise Consumer, Improving Your Ability to Select Assistive Technology, if you're interested in a large print paper version, I have that up here. And if you're interested in anything electronic, give me your email and I will email you and say, what are you interested in? Okay, and then I can email it to you, all right? Okay, thank you all very much.
There, okay. It's not my work ID.
That's your
That's my Braille card, but okay. Anyway.